It's quicker than E-Trade.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Congratulations, you're about to be the proud owner of some bank stock. This morning, the President and the Treasury Secretary outlined the new plan for some of that $700 billion. It is to invest $250 billion directly into the banks and buy up their stock. Paulson says he reluctantly embraced the idea.
Government owning a stake in any private U.S. company is objectionable to most Americans, me included. Yet the alternative of leaving businesses and consumers without access to financing is totally unacceptable.
As for the details, about half the money will go into big banks, about half the money into small banks. The FDIC will insure most new debt issued by the banks and expand its banking insurance. Let's get a couple different perspectives on this new plan. We'll begin with economist Gary Schilling. Gary, what do you think?
It depends on how you look at it. If you look at it strictly as an investment, it's highly risky. Hey, notice that the U.S. is not getting as good a deal as Warren Buffett. He got a 10% dividend yield from Goldman Sachs preferred stocks. U.S. government only gets 5%. Now, from an overall standpoint, though, you can say if this is what it takes to preserve the financial system, then it's really cheap. But again, it goes back to this idea of the international competition of this thing. It isn't something that Paulson by nature would introduce. I think it's more than anything being forced to be competitive globally.
So you're saying that the U.S. government is being peer pressured?
Absolutely. Peer pressured by the likes of the U.K., Germany, France, Italy. You run throughout Europe.
Well, if not this, what else could be done?
That's the $64 trillion question. And to me, the big problem with this is neither the policymakers in Washington nor the financial institutional leaders nor investors have approached this whole situation as anything but an ad hoc, crisis-by-crisis affair. And I think this latest maneuver is symptomatic of that.
All right, Gary, thanks for joining us.
Okay. Interesting times.
It certainly is. All right, not a big fan of the new plan. Now let's bring in our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, your take on taxpayers investing in banks?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. I had to stop for a moment. I just never would have imagined that the U.S. government would be spending $250 billion buying big chunks of Citigroup, mm-hmm. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs. So you have to take that pause. But what we're seeing is the moment when we say goodbye to the depression and hello to the recession. I think that what is happening here in the U.S. mirrored in Europe. Basically, we are truly having a coordinated effort by the central bankers and by governments to stem the panic, to stem the credit crunch, break the logjam, whatever metaphor you want to use. This nationalization is the key part of it. It's happening here. It's happening in Europe, and I think that it will bring, you know, the jargon term we're all starting to become comfortable with, liquidity to the market.
But as we just heard, there has been a lot of peer pressure here from Europe. How do we know that this is the way to go? Because it sounds pretty risky taking on bank stocks that who knows how much more value these banks might lose.
That's right. I mean, the equity stake could disappear, but peer pressure is a good way to put it. We live in a global economy. And to a large extent, Scott, we have a global solution that's evolving. And it's not just buying the U.S. government buying preferred stock. There are two other factors here. Guarantee all senior debt issued by banks over the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that. And then the other thing is unlimited FDIC insurance for non-interest-bearing accounts, which is essentially saying to small business here in the United States, small business, you're okay. But this is going to grab people's attention. It's going to, I think, bring some confidence back into the market. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. We're going to see investors cheering this move.
All right. The positive take there. Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
And sure enough, investors are cheering it. The Dow is up another 138 points to 9,526. The S&P 500 has gained 25 already this morning. In Japan today, the Nikkei closed 14% higher. It's never done that before. In Europe, the markets are up 4 to 5% so far. Obviously, European investors seem to like where the U.S. is headed with this. We're joined now by our correspondent, Stephen Beard. Stephen, what's behind the European confidence?
A great collective sigh of relief. The belief is growing that by taking concerted action, we could see a turning point in the financial crisis because all the major governments are on the same page.
And by that, you mean that governments in Europe and now the United States have agreed that going down the path of investing in banks is the way to go. The Brits have already started down this road. Do we have any idea how that's going?
Well, yesterday, the British government took control of a huge swathe of the commercial banking sector. And you've got a lot of worry about what the long-term implications of this could be for the British economy.
Like what?
Well, the fact that effectively the British government is now controlling almost half the country's residential mortgage market. Yesterday, the British Prime Minister said that he wanted to see these banks return to mortgage lending at last year's levels. Well, we've got economists coming out of the woodwork here this morning saying that would be disastrous. I mean, last year there was too much credit. This would create another housing boom and an even bigger bust. The worry is that because the British government has now got control over such a huge swathe of British banking, they could wield this economic power for political purposes and not for the sake of the long-term health of the British economy.
All right, Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Nonprofits account for about 10% of the U.S. economy. And of course, when the economy goes south, so do contributions to nonprofits. Since this could be a pretty rough downturn, we thought we'd check in and see how some nonprofits are doing so far. Here's Rachel Dornhelm.
Spirit in the House is a Minneapolis arts festival that's going into its fifth year. Keeping money in the house has become the big challenge for Executive Director Dean Seal. He said fundraising was moving ahead pretty well until a month and a half ago. Since then, it dropped off, and he decided to cancel a benefit he planned for later this month.
You know, I might get people at the $20 level, but I won't get anybody at the $500 level, so we're just putting it off.
Chronicle of Philanthropy editor Stacey Palmer says small organizations like SEALs are the first to feel the pinch. Other groups that have already taken a beating include the many charities funded by financial institutions.
Groups that are in New York that are dependent on banking money, those are the groups that are feeling a big hit right away.
Palmer says arts organizations suffer most during tough times. Donors tend to favor social organizations, groups they feel are helping the most in need. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Last week, we had reporters driving cross-country as part of Marketplace's special coverage of the financial crisis. I was stuck here in L.A., but there are stories here, too. They're just a little different. I went looking for small business people to see how they're adapting to the economic conditions. I visited Brett Wilson at his apartment. See if you can guess what he does by my reaction.
Oh, wow. Oh, whew.
I didn't know what else to say because Brett opened a duffel bag and pulled out a 10-foot, 60-pound Burmese python and then a 25-pound monitor lizard. They're his business associates.
I'm the world-famous lizard boy, which means that I bring snakes and lizards and frogs, bugs, and a tarantula, of course, out to schools or parties or pretty much anywhere where they need a big bucket of reptiles.
Obviously, a lot of places do. Brett's been making a living at this for 6 years. His girlfriend, Christy, also has her own business. She does voiceovers for commercials. They live in a loft in downtown L.A. with the reptiles and bugs and three cats.
We were going along pretty good. We've been putting money away specifically to buy this apartment if it goes condo. And I don't think we put a dime in that savings account since...
Well, we sold my car. We had two cars. We sold my car. Then we decided to buy a scooter.
They're doing what a lot of people are doing. saving on gas, they hardly ever eat out or take a vacation, and they're trying to keep two businesses alive in this economy. For Brett's traveling show, gas is the biggest cost, followed by rats.
Rodent meat is probably the most expensive meat on the planet. They're about $5 to $8 a pop.
I thought rats were everywhere.
You can't feed them the ones out the street because they might be full of pesticides or, you know, you want something that's a clean, safe, food-grade rat.
Food prices. This year, Brett raised his rate from $200 an hour to $225. So far, so good. Christy actually benefited from the housing collapse.
So, yes, I raised my prices this year, and I lost a lot of clients, but then I got an audition from my agent for a home auction foreclosure company.
I mean, it says horrible, but it's worked out for us, but, like, what an awful thing.
Brett and Christy are lucky so far. They really haven't been snake-bitten by this economy. But booking a reptile show might not be priority spending for a lot of people.
Being self-employed in such oddball fields as we've chosen, it's always a crapshoot. What makes me nervous is not so much my business, but other people's perception of what they can do with their money.
And yes, those are crickets in the background. I'll have another story from Los Angeles tomorrow. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
She said, I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. You fool, you fool.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.